thorough acceptance, awareness becomes possible. Enough for today.
Discussions by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh Ji on Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Series 5, Lecture Number 6, Date 27 February 1973, Woodland, Bombay.
The first question: in which way the mirror-like original mind gets identified with the dust of the past knowledge and experience? Mind is pure, and no impurity can enter it. That is impossible. The mind is just Buddha nature, the ultimate. And when I say mind, I don't mean your mind. I mean simply mind, where no I and you exist. You are the impurity. Just behind you is the original mind. You are the dust. So first try to analyze what you are, and then you will be able to understand how the original mind gets identified with the past, with memories, with dust. What you are right now, if I ask you what you are, you can answer in two ways. One will be a verbal answer, and in that verbal answer you will relate your past. You will say, my name is this, I belong to this family or that, to this religion or that, to this country or that. I am educated, uneducated, rich, poor. These are all past experiences. They are not you. You have been through them. You have passed through them. They have been the passage. But your past gets unaccumulated. This will be the verbal answer, but this is not the real answer. This is your mind, are you, the false ego. Right now, if you leave all your past, you forget your father, your parents, your family, your religion, your country, which are accidental. If you forget all that is accidental and just remain with yourself here and now, who are you? No name will come to your consciousness, no form, but a simple awareness that you are. You cannot say who I am, you can simply say I am. The moment you answer the who, you move into the past. You are a simple consciousness, a pure mind, an innocent mirror. Right now, this very moment, you are. Who are you? Just a simple awareness that I am. Even the I is not needed. The deeper you move, you will feel just emptiness, existence. This existence is the pure mind. But this existence has no form. This is formless. निराकार. दिस एग्जिस्टेंस हैज नो नेम, नेमलेस, अनाम. इट विल बी डिफिकल्ट टू बी इंट्रोड्यूस्ड बाय दिस विच रियली यू आर. इन द सोसाइटी relating with others, you will need some name, some form. Your past supplies you name and form. Those name and form are useful. Without them, it will be difficult to survive. They are needed, but they are not you. They are just labels. Because of this utilitarian need, the original mind gets identified with name and form. A child is born, he is simple consciousness. But you have to call him, you have to give him a name. In the beginning, the child will use his own name. He will not say, I am feeling hungry. He will say, Ram is feeling hungry. Ram is his name. He will say, Ram is feeling very angry. Only later on he will learn that this is not, this cannot be used in this way. He cannot call himself Ram. Ram is the name to be called by others, and then he will learn the use of I. First he will get identified with Ram, the name, others calling him. Then he will get identified with I. This is utilitarian. You need it. Without it, survival will be difficult. Because of this utilitarian necessity, one gets identified. You can go beyond this identification. And the moment you start going beyond and reclaiming your original consciousness, you have started meditation. And you can start meditation only when you get frustrated with your name and form and the world that belongs to it. Religion starts when you get frustrated, totally frustrated, with the world of name and form. And the whole thing looks meaningless. It is. Ultimately, it is meaningless. This feeling of meaninglessness of the world that is created around name and form makes you uneasy. That uneasiness is the beginning of religious search. You become uneasy because with this label you cannot get totally identified. The label remains the label. You remain what you are. This label covers you a little, but it cannot become your totality. And sooner or later, you get fed up with this label. And you want to know really who you are. And the moment you ask sincerely, who am I? You are on a different journey. You are transcending. This identification is natural. There is another reason why it is so easy to get identified. This is a room. If I say to you, look at the room, where you will look? You will look at the walls. Walls are not the room. Room is just roominess. It is not the walls. Walls are just the boundary of the space that we call room. But if I tell you to look at the room, you will look at the walls, because the roominess cannot be looked at. You are just inner space. Your name and form are the walls. They give you a boundary. They give you a definition. They give you a definite space, place. You can be identified with that definiteness. Otherwise, you are just a zero, sunya, a nothingness. That nothingness is there. That inner space is there. Look at it in this way. You breathe in, you breathe out. If you silently breathe in and breathe out, and there is no thinking in the mind, you are simply sitting under a tree, breathing in, breathing out. What you will feel? You will feel there is outer space, there is inner space. The breath comes into the inner space, the breath moves out to the outer space. Where you are, there are simply two spaces. Your throat is just a door, a swinging door. When the breath comes in, the breath forces the door and moves in. When the breath goes out, it again forces the door and goes out. Your throat is just a swinging door, and there are two spaces, the outer and the inner. And if this door is broken, then there are not even two spaces, one space. You will get afraid if you feel a nothingness within. You want to be something definable, definite. There is no one definite inside. The outer space is also infinite. The inner space is also infinite. That's why Buddha insisted that there is no soul, no Atma. You are just a vacant space, infinite. It is difficult to feel oneself this infinite space unless you make an arduous effort. One gets identified with the boundaries. It is easier to feel oneself that way, with the boundaries. Your name is just a boundary. Your body is just a boundary. Your thoughts are just a boundary. For outer utility, for your own convenience also, you get identified. Then, once you get identified, accumulation goes on and on and on. And with accumulation, you feel a fulfillment of the ego. You are identified with your riches. Then you go on accumulating. You have a feeling you are growing greater, bigger. You have a big house, then a bigger house, more bigger house. You feel that you are getting bigger and bigger. And that's how greed is born. Greed is nothing but an expansion, an effort to expand the ego. But howsoever great you become in your ego, you can never become infinite. And you are infinite within. If you can look into the nothingness, you are infinite within. That's why ego can never be satisfying. Ultimately, it is frustrating. It cannot become infinite. It will remain finite. This is how one has a spiritual discontent always. You are infinite. Nothing less will be helpful for you. And nothing less will ever satisfy you. But every boundary is going to be finite. It is needed. It is necessary in a way, useful, but it is not true. It is not the truth. This inner mirror, this inner mind, is pure consciousness, just consciousness. Just look at the light. You say the room is filled with light. But how do you see the light? You have never seen light itself. You cannot see. You always see something lighted. Light falls on the walls, light falls on the books, light falls on other persons. It is reflected on those objects. Because you can see objects, you say it is light here. When you cannot see objects, you say it is darkness. You have never seen light pure in itself. It is always seen reflected on some object. Consciousness is even purer than light. It is the purest possibility in existence. If you become totally silent, all boundaries disappear. And you cannot say who you are. You are. Because there is no object you can feel in contrast to it that I am a subject, soul, or even consciousness. Because of this purity of consciousness, you always know yourself through something else. You cannot know yourself directly. So when you create boundaries, you feel that you know yourself. With a name, you know yourself. With your riches, you know yourself. Something around you becomes the boundary and the pure consciousness is reflected back. So when Buddha attained enlightenment, he said, I am no more. When you will attain to that state, you will also say, I am no more. Because without a boundary, how you can be? Or, when Shankara attained, he said, I am all. Both mean the same. If you are the all, you are no more. All are nothing, only two possibilities are there. But in both the possibilities, you are not. If you are all, Brahma, then you are not. Or you are not totally nothingness, then too you are not. Because of this, it is necessary, part of life, to get identified. And it is good, because unless you get identified, you cannot get unidentified. Unless you get identified, you cannot get unidentified. Once one has to get identified, it is like this. If you are born healthy and never been ill, you will never be aware of your health. You cannot be. Because awareness of health needs a background of disease and illness. You will have to fall ill to know that you were healthy or what health is. The other will be needed. This is what the Eastern esoteric science says. This is why the world is, to experience that you are divine. The world gives a contrast. Go in a school and the teacher is writing on a blackboard with white chalk. He can write even on a white board, but then it will be meaningless because it will be invisible. It cannot be seen. Only on a blackboard the white chalk writes and it is seen. The blackboard is a necessity. The white writing becomes visible. The world is just a blackboard, and you become visible because of it. This is an inherent polarity. It is good. That's why in the East we have never said that the world is bad. We take it just as a school, a training. It is good because only in contrast you will be able to know your purity. But when you come into the world, you will get identified, because with identification you enter. The world starts. You will have to fall ill to know your inner health. This has been a basic question all over the world. Why this world is there? Why at all? Many answers have been given. But those answers are just superfluous. Only this attitude seems to be very deep, meaningful. That the world is just a background. Without it, you cannot become aware of your inner consciousness. I will tell you one story. One man, very rich, richest in his country, became disturbed, became frustrated. He felt life is meaningless. He had everything that could be purchased, but all that can be purchased proves meaningless. Only something that cannot be purchased can have real meaning. He had everything he could purchase. He could have purchased the whole world. But what to do now? He was frustrated. Deep discontent with him. So he gathered all his valuable ornaments, gold, jewels, everything in a big bag, and he started on a travel just to find a man who can give him something valuable, a glimpse of happiness, and he will present this whole, his whole life's earning to him. He went from one teacher to another, traveled and traveled, and no one was able even to give him a glimpse of happiness. And he was ready to give everything, his whole kingdom. And then he reached a village, asking for Mullah Nasruddin. He was a fakir living there. So the village man said, he is just sitting outside the town, meditating under a tree. You go there. And if he cannot give you a glimpse of happiness, then forget. Then you will never get it. Then you can go to the corners of the world. If this man cannot give you a glimpse, then there is no possibility. So the man was very excited. He came to Nasruddin. He was sitting under a tree, and it was just sun was setting. The man said that I have come for this purpose. My whole life's earning is here in this bag, and I will give it to you if you can give me a glimpse of happiness. Mullah Nasruddin listened. The evening was descending. It was becoming dark. Without answering him anything, he snatched the bag from the rich man and ran away. Of course, the rich man followed him, crying, weeping, screaming. The village streets were known to Mullah Nasruddin. They were not known to the rich man. He was a stranger. So he couldn't get him. All over the village, the whole village started following them. Nasruddin was running away, just round and round. And the man was mad. He was crying, I have been robbed of all my life, of all my riches. I am a poor man, I have become a beggar. He was weeping like anything. And then Nasruddin reached to the same tree, just put the bag before the tree and went behind the tree to hide there. The man came there. He fell on the bag, started weeping in happiness. Nasruddin looked from the tree and said, are you happy, man? Have you a little glimpse? The man said, I am as happy as anyone can be on this earth. What happened? To have a peak, a valley is needed. To feel happiness, unhappiness is needed. To know the divine, the world is needed. The world is just a valley. The man is the same. The bag is the same. Nothing new has happened. But now he says he is happy. As happy as anyone can be on this earth. And just a few minutes before, he was miserable. And nothing has changed. The man is the same, the bag is the same, the tree is the same, and nothing has changed. But the man is now happy, dancing. The contrast has happened. Consciousness gets identified because through identification the world is. And through the world you can regain yourself. When Buddha attained, he was asked, what have you achieved? He said, nothing. On the contrary, I have lost much. I have not attained anything because whatsoever I have attained, now I know, was always there. It was my nature. It was never taken away from me. So I have not achieved anything. I have achieved that which was already there, already achieved. I have lost only my ignorance. Identification is ignorance. It is part of this great play, this cosmic leela, this cosmic play, that you will have to lose yourself to find yourself again. This losing yourself is just a way, and the only way, to regain yourself. If you have lost already too much, you can regain. If you have yet not lost yourself enough, you will have to lose more. And nothing can be done before that. No help is possible before that. Unless you are lost completely in the valley, in the darkness, in the samsara, in the world, nothing can be done. Lose so that you can gain. This looks paradoxical, but this is how the world is, the very process is. The second question, if one begins to feel that life is a psychodrama, then one also feels detached and lonely. Thus the intensity, sincerity, and depth of living is lost. Please suggest what to do in this situation. What is then the right attitude to life? If one begins to feel that life is a psychodrama, then one also feels detached and lonely. Then feel it. Then why create a problem? If you feel detached and lonely, then feel it. But we go on creating problems. Whatsoever happens, we will create a problem out of it. Feel lonely and detached. And if you can be at ease with your loneliness, it will disappear. And if you start doing something with it to transcend it, it will never disappear. It will remain there. Now, a modern trend in psychology and psychoanalysis says anything can disappear if you remain with it without creating any problem. And this has been one of the oldest teachings of Tantra. For last 10 or 12 years in Japan, a small psychotherapeutic technique has been in use. Western psychoanalysts, psychiatrists have been studying it. It is wonderful. If someone goes neurotic or psychotic, this therapy, this is a Zen therapy, simply puts that man or woman in a lonely room. And they say, remain with yourself whatsoever you are. Neurotic? Okay. Be neurotic and live with it. And the doctors will not interfere. Food will be provided, needs will be fulfilled, attention will be given, but no interference. The patient has to live with himself. And within 10 days, he starts changing. Western psychoanalysis works for years and basically nothing changes. What happens to this patient? No interference from outside. Just acceptance that, okay, you are neurotic, so nothing can be done. Zen says one tree is small and another tree is very big. Okay, one is small, another is big, and nothing can be done. Once you accept a thing, you are already transcending it. One of the most original psychiatrists of England, R.D. Lang, has proposed now that if we can leave a madman to himself, just paying love, loving attention to him, fulfilling his needs, and not interfering with him, he will get over within 3 or 4 weeks. His proposal is that no madness can last for 10 days, more than 10 days, if it is not interfered. If you interfere, then you prolong the process. What happens when you are not interfering in anything? You feel lonely, so feel lonely. It is how you are. But when you feel lonely, you start doing something. And then you are divided. Then one part of you feels lonely and another part tries to change it. This is absurd. It is just pulling yourself by your legs up, or the strings of your shoes, and pulling yourself up to the sky. Absurd. You are lonely, so what you can do? There is no one else to do. You are alone, so be lonely. This is your fate. This is how you are. What will happen if you accept it? If you accept, your fragmentariness will disappear. You will become one. You will be whole, not divided. You are depressed, so be depressed. Don't do anything. What can you do? And whatsoever you will do will be done out of depression. It is going to create more confusion. You can pray to God, but you will pray through depression. And you will even make the God depressed through your prayers. Don't do that violence. Your prayer is going to be a depressed prayer. You can meditate. What you will do? The depression will be there. Because you are depression, whatsoever you do, the depression will follow. More confusion will be created. More frustration, because you cannot succeed. And when you cannot succeed, you will feel more depressed. And this can go on ad infinitum. It is better to remain with the first depression than to create a second circle and then a third circle. Remain with the first, the original is beautiful. And the second will be a false, and the third will be a far-off echo. Don't create these. The first is beautiful. You are depressed. So this is how existence happens to you this moment. You are depressed. Remain with it. Wait and watch. You cannot be depressed for long, because in this world nothing is permanent. This world is a flux. The world cannot change its basic love for you so that you remain depressed forever. Nothing is forever here. Everything is moving and changing. Existence is a river. It cannot stop for you, just for you, so you remain depressed forever. It is moving. It has already moved. If you look at your depression, you will feel that even your depression is not the same the next moment. Different. It is changing. Just watch. Remain with it and don't do anything. This is how through non-doing transformation happens. This is what is meant effortless effort. Feel depression, taste it deeply. Love it. It is your fate. And suddenly you will feel it has disappeared. Because the man who can even accept depression cannot be depressed. A mind who can even accept depression cannot remain depressed. Depression needs a non-accepting mind. This is not good, that is not good, this should not be, that should not be, this must not be like this. Everything is denied, rejected, not accepted. No is basic. Even happiness will be rejected by such a mind. Such a mind will find something in happiness also. One man came to me just the other day, and he said, meditation is going deep and I am feeling very happy, but I am suspicious. It must be illusory, this happiness, because I have never felt any happiness before. I must be in a delusion. So much doubt has come to me. Now clarify my doubt, he said. Even if happiness happens to a mind who has been always rejecting, he will feel doubts about it. He will think something has gone wrong. He was happy, so he feels something has gone wrong. Just by meditating for a few days, this is not possible. A non-accepting mind will non-accept anything. But if you can accept your loneliness, your depression, your sadness, you are transcending already. Acceptance is transcendence. You have taken the very ground away, and the depression cannot stand there. Try this. Whatsoever your state of mind, accept it and wait when the state changes itself and you are not changing it. And if you can feel that beauty when states change by themselves, when you know that just like sun rises in the morning and then sets in the evening, and again it will rise, and again it will set, and it will go on. You need not do anything about it. If you can feel your states of mind changing by themselves, you can remain different. You can remain away, miles away, as if the mind is going somewhere else. The sun rising, setting, the depression coming, the happiness coming, going. You are not in it. It goes and comes by itself. The states come and move. The practice of witnessing . If one begins to feel that life is a psychodrama, then one also feels detached and lonely. So feel. Thus the intensity, sincerity and depth of living is lost. Let it be lost. Because the sincerity and depth that can be lost was not real. It was pseudo, false, and it is better that a false thing is the last. How a real depth can be lost? The very definition of a real depth is that it cannot be lost whatsoever you do. If you can disturb a Buddha, then he is not a Buddha. Whatsoever you do, he remains undisturbed. That undisturbance, unconditionally, is the Buddha nature. The real cannot be lost. The real is always unconditional. If I love you, and I said, don't be angry, otherwise my love will be lost. So such a love is better. Sooner last the better. Whatsoever you do makes no difference. The love will remain. Only then it is worth. So if just by looking at the world as a psychodrama, as a drama, your intensity, your depth of living is lost, it is not worth preserving. It was false. Why it is losing? It was really an act in a drama. And you were thinking it is real, so you felt it is deeper. Now you know it is just a drama. If it is just a drama, the sincerity is lost. The sincerity was false. You were thinking it is real, and it was not real. Just looking at life as a drama, it disappears. It is just like a rope was there, lying in a dark room. And you felt it is a snake. And there was no snake. And now you have come with a lamp. And you say, with the lamp, the snake is lost. Only the rope remains. If with the lamp, the snake is lost, it was not there. If you look at life as a drama, that which is false will be lost. And that which is real will erupt for the first time in view. Wait, let the false be lost, and wait, there will be a gap, an interval, before the false disappears. And the real comes, there will be a gap. When false shadows will have disappeared completely, and your eyes will not be filled by them, and your eyes have become detached from the false shadows, you will be able to look at the real that is always there. But one has to wait. Please suggest what to do in this situation. Nothing. Please don't do anything. You have mess. You have created a mess because of your too much doing. You are such a good doer. You have confused everything around you, not only for yourself but for others also. Be a non-doer. That will be compassion for yourself upon yourself. Be compassionate. Don't do anything. Because with a false mind, confused mind, everything becomes more confused. With a confused mind, it is better to wait and not to do anything, so that the confusion disappears. It will disappear. Nothing is permanent in this world. Only you need a deep patience. Don't be in a hurry. I will tell you one story. Buddha was traveling through a forest. The day was hot, just midday. He felt thirsty. So he said to his disciple Anand, go back. We crossed a little stream. You go back and bring, fetch some water for me. Ananda went back. But the stream was very small. and some carts were passing through the stream. The water was disturbed and had become dirty. All the dirt that had settled in the bed has come up, and the water was not now drinkable. So Ananda thought, I should have to go back. He came back and he told Buddha that that water has become absolutely dirty and it is not drinkable. Allow me to go ahead. I know there is a river just few miles away from here ahead. I will go and fetch water. Buddha said, no, you go back to the same stream. When Buddha said, Ananda had to follow, but he followed with half heart. He knew that that water cannot be brought, and time is unnecessarily wasted, and he is feeling thirsty. But when he said he had to go, again he came back and he said, why you insist that water is not drinkable? Buddha said, you go again. And when a Buddha is saying, Ananda had to follow. But third time when he reached, the water was as clear as ever. The dust has flown away. The dead leaves have gone. The water was pure again. Then Ananda laughed. He brought the water and he came dancing. He fell in Buddha's feet and he said, your ways of teaching are miraculous. You have taught me a great lesson that just patience is needed. Nothing is permanent. And this is Buddha's basic teaching, nothing is permanent. Everything is fleeting. So why be so worried? Go back to the same stream. By now everything should have changed. Nothing remains the same. Just be patient. Go again and again and again. Just a few moments and the leaves have gone and the dirt has settled again and the water is pure. Ananda also asked Buddha, when second time he was going back, he asked, you insist, so I go, but can I do something to make that water pure? Buddha said, you please don't do anything. Otherwise, you will make it impure, more impure. And don't enter the stream. Just be outside. Wait on the bank. Your entering the stream will create mess. The stream flows by itself. Allow it to flow. Nothing is permanent. Life is a flux. Heraclitus has said that you cannot step twice in the same river. It is impossible to step twice in the same river because the river has flown. Everything has changed, and not only the river has flown, you are also a different one. You are also a river flowing. If you see this impermanency of everything, don't be in a hurry. Don't try to do anything, just wait. Wait in a total non-doing. And if you can wait, the transformation will be there. This very waiting is transformation. The third question. The practice of witnessing makes me quiet, is still and silent. But then the friends around me say that I have become serious. There seems to be some substance in what they say. Please explain, how can one grow simultaneously in stillness and playfulness? If you have really become silent, you will not pay attention to what others are saying. If others' opinion are still important, you are not silent. Really, you are waiting that they should say something, or they should approve and appreciate that you have become silent. Your silence needs their approval. They should certify. You are not confident that you have become silent. Others' opinion are meaningful only because you don't know anything. Opinion is never knowledge. Others' opinion you go and gathering because you don't know what you are, who you are, what is happening to you. You have to ask others, what is happening to me? I have to ask others. If you are really silent, quiet, still, there are no friends then. No opinion is meaningful. You can laugh. Let them say whatsoever they say. But you become affected. Whatsoever they say goes deep in you. You become disturbed. Your silence is false, forced, cultivated. It is not a spontaneous flowering within you. You may have forced yourself to be silent, but you were boiling within. And the silence was just on the surface. And someone says, you are not. Or someone says, this is not good. Or someone says, this is false. And you are disturbed. And the silence is gone. The silence is gone, that's why you ask. That there seems to be some substance in what they say, that you have become serious. So what is the wrong in being serious? If you are born serious, to be serious, you will be. You cannot force playfulness. Otherwise, your playfulness will be a serious one. And you will destroy the whole play. There are serious players. They get so much serious in their games and play that even it becomes more anxiety creating. I was reading someone's memoirs. He was a great industrialist, much worried, day-to-day problems. Someone suggested golf, play golf, that will be anxiety reducing. He started playing golf, but the same man. He became so excited in his golf that he couldn't sleep now. He was playing the whole night. The industry was a burden, now golf became a second burden and a stronger one. He played golf but with a serious mind, the same mind. If you are serious, you are serious. Nothing can be done about it. Be serious and remain serious. And then you have already started being playful. You are playful about your seriousness, not serious about it. You take it as a play. Okay, God has given me this role, so I will be a serious one. And I will play my seriousness. It has disappeared deep down. You understand me? You can create seriousness out of your playfulness. You can create playfulness out of your seriousness. you are a sad one, a serious one, so tell everyone that I am born serious and I am going to remain, and don't get serious about it. Be simply, and then you can laugh about it, and it will disappear, and you will not even become aware when it has disappeared. And don't pay attention what others say. This is a disease. They will drive you crazy, the others. Who are these others? And why you are so much interested in them? They drive you crazy and you drive them crazy. Because you are others to them. Why so much importance to others' opinion? Pay attention to your own experiences and remain true to your own experiences. If you feel good in being serious, okay. If you feel you have become silent and quiet and still through your practice of witnessing, why be interested and why be disturbed by what others say? But we are not confident. We must gather others' opinion. We must go on a signature campaign that I have become a Buddha. Fine. When everyone signs it, and I have gathered many signatures, at least the majority, I am a Buddha. This is not the way to be an enlightened one. And please explain how one can grow simultaneously in stillness and playfulness. One grows. There has been never any case otherwise. One grows simultaneously in stillness and playfulness. But if our stillness is false, then only the problem arises. All those who have known silence have always been playful, non-serious. They could laugh. And they could not laugh only on others, they could laugh on themselves. Bodhidharma entered China 1400 years before from India. He was putting one of his shoe on his head. Another was in one of his feet, one was on his head. The emperor of China, Wu, had come to welcome him. He became disturbed. There were many, many rumors, of course, that this man is strange. But he was an enlightened one, and the emperor wanted to welcome him in his kingdom. He became disturbed. His courtiers, they also became disturbed. What type of man? And he was laughing. It was not good to say anything before others when everyone has gone, and the Bodhidharma and the emperor retired into their room. The emperor asked, "Please tell me, why are you making yourself such a fool? Why are you carrying one shoe on your head?" Bodhidharma laughed and said, "Because I can laugh on myself. And it is good to show you my reality. I am such a man." and I don't pay more importance to my head than I pay to my feet. Both are same to me. Higher and lower have disappeared. And moreover, I want to tell you, I don't pay any significance to what others say about me. And this is good. The first moment I am entering, you must know what type of man I am. This Bodhidharma was a rare jewel. Very few have existed who can be compared to him. What he is showing, he is simply showing on this path of spirituality, you are to go alone as an individual. Society becomes irrelevant. Someone had come to take an interview with George Gurdjieff. The man who had come was a big journalist. Gurdjieff's disciples were very much excited because now the story was going to be in a big newspaper, and their master's photo and their master's news is to be published. They cared very much, paid much attention to the journalist. They virtually forgot their master. They were around the journalist. And then the interview began, but really it never began. Because when the journalist asked some question to Gurdjieff, Gurdjieff said, "Wait a minute." Just by his side was sitting a lady. Gurdjieff asked, "What day is today?" The lady said, "Sunday." Gurdjieff said, "How it is possible?" "Because just the day before, it was Saturday." "So how Sunday can be today? Just the other day you said it is Saturday, and now Sunday. How after Saturday Sunday can come?" The journalist stood. He said, "I'm going." This man seems to be mad. All the disciples were just, they couldn't understand what has happened. When the journalist has left, Gurdjieff was laughing. What others say is not relevant. What you feel, be authentic to it. But be authentic. If real silence happens to you, you will be able to laugh. It is said about Dzogchen, one Zen master, that when he attained enlightenment, many people asked, "What you did after that?" He said, "I ordered for a cup of tea." "So what to do next?" "Everything is finished." And Dzogchen is serious about his playfulness, is playful about his seriousness. Really, what remains? Don't pay much attention what others say. And only remain one thing, don't force and cultivate stillness. A cultivated stillness will be serious, ill, tense. But how a real silence comes to you, try to understand this. You are tense, you are unhappy, you are depressed, angry, greedy, violent. Thousand diseases are there. Still, you can practice silence. These diseases will be within you, and you can create a layer of silence. You can do a transcendental meditation. You can use a mantra. The mantra is not going to change your violence, neither it is going to change your greed. It is not going to change anything deep. The mantra can give just a tranquilizing effect. Just on the periphery, you will feel more silent. This is just a tranquilizer, a sound tranquilizer. And tranquilizing is possible through many ways. Many ways. When you repeat a mantra continuously, you get sleepy. Any continuous repetition of a certain sound creates boredom and sleep. You feel relaxed. This relaxation is just on the surface. Within you remain the same. Go on practicing the mantra every day, you will feel a certain stillness, but not real, because your diseases have not changed. Your personality structure remains the same, just whitewashed. Stop the mantra. Stop the practice, and all your diseases will come up again. This is happening everywhere. Seekers move from one teacher to another. They go on moving, practicing, and then when they stop their practice, they find they are the same. Nothing has happened. Nothing will happen in this way. These are cultivated silences. You have to go on cultivating. If you go on cultivating, of course, like a habit, they remain with you. When you break the habit, they disappear. A real silence comes not by just using some superficial technique, but being aware of all that you are. Not only being aware, but remaining with the fact what you are. Remain with the fact. This is very difficult, because the mind wants change. How to change violence? How to change depression? How to change unhappiness? The mind seeks change, somehow to create a better image in the future. Because of this, one goes on seeking this and that method. Remain with the fact and don't try to change it. Do it for 1 year. Fix a date that from this date, for 1 year, I will not think in terms of change. I will remain whatsoever I am, just alert and aware. I'm not saying that you are not to do anything. That alertness is the only effort. You have to be alert. And not thinking in terms of change. Remaining whatsoever you are, good, bad, whatsoever. 1 year with no attitude of change. Just being alert. And suddenly one day you will find you are no more the same. Alertness has changed everything. In Zen, they call it Zazen. Just sitting and doing nothing. Whatsoever happens, happens. You are just sitting. Zazen means just sitting, doing nothing. In Zen monasteries, monks will sit for years, the whole day. You will think they are meditating. They are not. They are just sitting silently. And by silence, it's not that they are using some mantra to create any silence. They are simply sitting. The leg goes dead. They feel it. They are alert. Their body feels tired. They are alert. The body feels tired. This is how body has to feel. Thoughts are moving. They know. They are not trying to stop them. They are not trying to push them away. They are not doing anything. Thoughts are there just like clouds in the sky. But they know that the clouds cannot destroy the sky. They come and go. So thoughts are moving in the sky of consciousness. They come and go. They don't force them. They don't stop them. They don't do anything. They are just alert. The thoughts are moving. Sometimes depression comes, a cloud. Everything becomes shadowy. Sometimes happiness comes, a sunshine. Everything starts dancing. And as if all over the consciousness flowers open. But they are not disturbed either by this or that, either by a cloudy weather or by a sunshine. They just wait and see. Things are moving. They are just sitting on the bank of a river and everything goes on moving. They don't try to change anything. A bad thought comes. They don't say this is bad. Because the moment you say this is bad, you have the greed to change it. The moment you say this is bad, you have pushed it away. You have condemned. And you would like to change it into something good. They simply say this is this, that is that. No condemnation, no valuation, no justification, simple watching, witnessing. Sometimes they forget witnessing. Then too they are not disturbed. They know that, of course, it is so that I forgot to witness. Now I remember, I will witness again. They don't create any problem. They live what is. Years come and go, and they go on sitting and seeing what is. One day, everything has disappeared. Just like a dream, everything has disappeared. You are awakened. This awakening is not a practiced thing. This awakening is not cultivated. This awakening is your nature, your basic nature. It has erupted because you could wait patiently, watch, and you didn't create any problems. Remember this as a very basic thing. Don't create problems. Don't create problems. One lady was here just 2 or 3 days before. She says, my mind is sexual, so what to do? Someone comes who says, I feel very inferior. An inferiority complex is there. What to do? So I told that man, you feel inferior, so feel inferior. Know that you are. What to do? There is nothing to do. One feels sexual, so feel sexual. Know that you are sexual. But the moment I say such things to someone, he feels shocked. He had come for a technique to change himself. No one accepts oneself. You are such enemies to yourself. You never had any love for yourself. You have never been at ease with yourself. And this is surprising, that you expect everyone to love you, and even you yourself cannot love you. You are so against. You would like to settle yourself in every way and create another. If you are allowed, you will create another man. You will not be satisfied with that also, because you will remain behind it again. Love yourself, accept yourself, and don't create unnecessary problems. And all problems are unnecessary. There are no necessary problems. I have not come across any. And then remain with your facticity. Transformation will happen, but it is not in result. You cannot force it to happen. It is a consequence, not a result. If you accept yourself and remain alert, it comes. You cannot force it. You cannot say that I will force it to come. And if you force, a false thing will happen to you. And then that false thing can be disturbed by anyone. By anyone. The last question. You said that the acceptance transforms, but when I accept my senses and desires, I feel that I have become animal-like instead of being transformed. So this is your transformation. This is your reality. And what is wrong in being an animal? I have not seen a single man who can be compared to any animal. Suzuki used to say that I love a frog, even a frog, more than a man. Look at a frog sitting near a pond. How meditatively a frog sits. Look at him. How meditatively. Not disturbed by the whole world going on. Just sits and sits and meditates. One with existence. Suzuki said that when I was enlightened, I was a man. And when I became enlightened, I became just like a cat. Look at a cat. She knows the secret how to relax. And she has not read any books about relaxation. How to relax. Look at a cat. No man can be a better teacher than a cat. Relax and alert. If you relax, you go to sleep. The cat is alert even in her sleep. And the body is so flexible, so relaxed in every movement. What is wrong in being an animal? Man, through his ego, has created comparison. He says, we are not animals. But no animal would like to be human beings. They are at ease, at home in existence. They are not worried. They are not tense. Of course, they do not create any religions because they don't need. They don't have any psychoanalysts. Not because that they are undeveloped, but because they don't need. What is wrong with animals? Why this condemnation? This condemnation is part of human ego. Man thinks in terms that he is the superior one, the highest in the hierarchy. No animal has consented to this hierarchy. Darwin said that man evolved out of monkeys, but if you ask monkeys, I am afraid, they will not say that man is an evolution. They will say a degradation. Man thinks in himself as the center. There is no need. This is whole egoistic nonsense. If you feel like being animal, nothing is wrong in being an animal. Be totally. And be with full alertness. That alertness will first uncover your animal, because that is your reality. Your humanity is just false, skin deep. Someone insults you and the animal comes out, not the human being. Someone condemns you and the animal comes out, not the human being. It is there, and your humanity is just skin deep. If you accept everything, this skin deep humanity will disappear. This is a false thing, and you will become aware of your real animal. And this is good, to become aware of reality. If you go on being alert within this animal, you will find hidden the divine. And it is always better to be a real animal than to be an unreal man. Reality is the point. So I am not against animals. I am against only falsities. Don't be a false human being. Be a real animal. And with that reality, you have become authentic. Substantial. Now go on being alert, and by you will come to a deeper layer which is more real than the animal, and that is the divine. The divine is not only in you, remember, it is in all animals. It is not only that it is in animals, it is all in trees, it is in the rocks.
The divine is...